Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Three Film Feature, where in this episode, we're talking about our 100th film. Isn't that impressive? We're going to be looking at a lot of random stuff today, including two really bad science fiction films. But before we get to 2001, Planet of the Apes, and Plan 9 from Outer Space, we have to look at a documentary, our first one, which is from 1968, a little film called High School that chronicalizes high school. Weird stuff all about. Let's get into it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Movie Tales, where today we are looking at an entirely different genre than anything we have done before in a new subcategory of Movie Tales called Authentic Tales, where we're going to be looking at documentary films. We haven't done documentaries before. I do like documentaries. It's a harder topic to, like, broach, especially on, like, something like this when you're talking about, like, film and story and all that stuff. But I think it is important, and if you are a fan of film, you should you should watch documentaries, because they're just as informative and interesting and can give you a new perspective in, like, the way a movie does. So, to start off Authentic Tales, I thought we'd just do a nice and simple one. Go back in time a little bit and watch this documentary called High School. High School is a film from 1968. I watched a rendition of it that you can find on the Internet Archive. And what this documentary is, it's from a man called Frederick Wiseman. He's made a couple other docs that you can check out. It follows just like the mundane day of a high school in the late 60s, just in, you know, the middle of America and everything going on with that. It's a very interesting watch. And as somebody who just like seeing the way history has, like, grown and changed, the way we've evolved in terms of, like, our culture and all that kind of stuff, it's very fascinating to go back and see what high school was like 56 years ago. Like, that's crazy to think about, because a lot has changed. You know, there are literal scenes in this movie where you're seeing kids learning to use a typewriter. We don't even use that technology anymore. They don't even have these types of cameras. They don't have this type of aesthetic. They don't have these type of glasses. Everybody is wearing big, stupid glasses that have, like, the weird, like, wing look to them. Like, the ladies' glasses have that specific look that's very old school, and it's strange. And it's just so interesting to think that there's probably a majority of the people, especially, like, the adults and the teachers of the faculty in this film, that probably grew up out without knowing what half the stuff is we have today. They might not know what an iPhone is. And that's so weird to think about. And I just love seeing that. Because this movie is also coming out in 1968. It is a huge time in American culture in particular. They address the Vietnam War in this movie. They address the stuff of Martin Luther King Jr. in this movie. Like, there is just so much being said in, like, this one classroom of this one random day in this high school. And it's so interesting and weird to think about. I love that stuff so much. I am kind of a history buff, but, like, the 20th century of history, where, like, culture kind of started to, like, exist as this thing that it's going to become, because I like popular culture so much. I like seeing the evolution of popular culture. And just this was a really interesting documentary. Now, I don't think it's perfect. And I do think there is a lot of just, like, you know, it's the 60s and certain things are said and done that are of the 60s. But, you know, if you could go in with that mindset, there is something here that's worth exploring. It's just very fascinating to see that. Now, this also broaches another topic I don't really talk about, and that is just the concept of high school alone. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I was an A-plus student or that I enjoyed going to high school or that it's ever been something I think is worthwhile. I do think this movie in particular as well, it shows you, like, there is so much pressure put on these young people to figure out what they want to do with their lives and who they are supposed to be. And that is the part of school I don't really like. I don't think you should tell a 17-year-old or 18-year-old you have to decide the rest of your life right now. It's never going to go that way for you. And even today, college and universities are very fucking expensive. They're expensive back then too. But it's so different. 56 years, and it's just easier to, like, choose a path back then and just be stuck with it. But when you're today, and you're young, you have all these other choices, all these other options, but no matter what you do, it's going to set you back something. And I just hate the idea of like telling a young person whose brain isn't fully developed yet, you got to decide what your life's going to be. School is used for, in my opinion, and again, I know teachers, I have a lot of friends and family who are teachers. I think what school is best used for is giving kids and children of various ages, teenagers, social skills and just like cues for what life should be like, how you interact, how you behave, the way to properly present yourself in certain situations. That's what school should be. It shouldn't be about taking these tests and having this information about science or social studies or any of that stuff. It is important to know like the basis of that, but half the stuff you learn in school, whether it be analyzing a poem or learning the history of like particular war or any of that, or just what goes on in like a plant cell and that kind of shit, that's not important stuff. That's not going to help you get a job as like a construction worker or a lawyer or any of that shit. So it's very weird the things we actually like teach these kids. And what I find very fascinating about this documentary in particular is we see like the evolution of how things have changed today. Because I was in high school in the 2010s. That's when I was in high school. The stuff we talked about is not the same stuff that they are talking about here. It's very interesting to see that. We don't spend a lot of time like seeing like the classroom in session. It's just more like the end of the stuff. Like there's one sequence where one of the teachers is like, "Do you guys like this school?" And this one kid who's wearing glasses, like sunglasses indoors, he's like, "This school's a fucking joke, man. Like this education system, it's bullshit." And then you have this young African-American man who's like, "I actually think there's like some good stuff we're learning here and some valuable lessons," and that kind of like ebb and flow of just like a teacher willing to take the criticism and just being like, "All right, let's see what you got to say. What are you up to? What are you thinking?" That's really interesting. I respect that a lot. There's also a sequence where a teacher is like, "We're going to analyze a poem today, but not just any poem. It's a Simon and Garfunkel song." And I'm like, that's really cool. So then she's just like, "I'm going to read you the poem that is this song." I forget what song it is. And then she's like, "I'm going to just play it on the recorder. There we go. Tell me what you guys think this is." I'm like, that's pretty cool. But man, what a useless skill. You know, I like that stuff in school. Because that's where I excelled in, is the English like literature side of things and talking about that. Because I gave a shit about that. If you don't give a shit about Simon and Garfunkel, how are you going to react to listening to a song about it? And that's the other thing I really appreciated, is just every time we're in a classroom or watching an assembly or watching the marching band just walk to and from whatever the hell on a stage. It's just a realistic audience of kids. They're not paying attention too much. They're kind of just like making stupid jokes with their friends half the time. And that's what school should be about. That is where it's the most important, is developing those skills. And I love to see that. And there's a lot of just like zooming in on people just talking about shit. And it's very weird in some ways in that capacity. I'm not against it. But where I am against it is when we're in a gym class for a couple of teenage girls and we zoom in on a couple of butts. It's 1968. I'm aware of that. I know why you did it, you pervs. Like, it's just very weird that we're aware that this is a high school, and it's like, look at these little girls playing their, you know, sports and their little shorts. It's very weird. And there's also some, like, very weird, like, censorship and conservativeness to a lot of the stuff going on here. And I love that. I love that we could talk about this stuff in school. I feel like this education part of stuff, the romantic and sex education, that has also shifted so much. So, on the side of censorship, one of my favorite sequences is the principal has to talk to this one female student because the skirt she is wearing is too short. It goes above her knee. And she's like, "Well, I didn't know we had a dress code about that. I just wanted to wear this because I'm comfortable wearing this and I like to wear this." And he's like, "Yeah, I know. I'm not trying to censor you. I'm just saying some other people might be offended by that." And then you have an older woman, probably somebody in her 60s, who is just like, "Well, I think you look like a hussy and it's just disrespectful and gross. You can't wear that to prom. My husband, who is coming here for you kids, he's going to come to prom. He's not going to dress like a slut." I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. Because I love that so much. It's another one of my favorite things is just that generation. The kids that grew up in the 60s, they are the counterculture generation. They grew up watching all this stuff. Endless wars going on overseas. TV inundated with just like bad politicians and a bunch of bullshit like that. Of course they don't give a shit how they dress. And the girl's wearing like stockings too, like her whole legs are covered up. It's not like she's showing leg. It's crazy. That sequence was just so interesting to me. So I'm like, that is just something so different. And we still have like these censorship things. The way I've always thought about it, and this is the other part about documentaries that we can get into, is exploring my opinions on a bunch of stuff. You should be allowed to wear what you want. There is, of course, going to be restrictions, like you can't show up naked, but if you want to show some leg, show some shoulder, you shouldn't, like, get angry at the student who is wearing that and instead, you know, make sure nobody comments on her in a negative way or says these things or harasses her about it. Teach those people to behave and not tell her to cover up. That's censorship. I'm all for not having censorship. But this is also about sex education, folks, and there's a couple things you need to learn. The first thing you need to learn, because a gynecologist tells us this, is that if you or your wife, because he says this to a room of dudes, I should just make that very clear. If you and your wife have had a bunch of sex with a bunch of different people, statistically speaking, you're going to get divorced. You should not have sex with other people unless it's your wife. Weird lesson to throw in there. And then this sequence is weird too. Like the sex education stuff, there's the whole thing with like the female reproductive system. I don't feel I need to explain that to you. I'm not going to explain that. Well, let's just talk about the weird gynecologist man who turned have sex with your wife into a weird bit about like how girls age differently than boys. And all the boys are like, hell yeah, women are weird, man. It was just so weird to see like this grown man make sex jokes to a group of teenage boys and get a huge laugh. That was so weird to see. It was very uncomfortable and strange. But we just don't do that anymore. We are both more open about stuff sexually, but we're also more like afraid to talk about it openly in classes. Like, I don't feel a teacher would like directly talk to you about these things, whereas you see a bunch of like the teachers in this, they're just like, yeah, sex, it's weird, it's fine, I don't know, just have it or don't. Wear protection, who gives a shit, you know, it's the 60s, baby. It's crazy, it's crazy. I do like it, though. There's a bunch of sequences where we're just watching, like, students get written up for, like, detention, like a bad boy punching a kid because they're starting an altercation, and the teacher's like, well, why would you do that? This doesn't give you the right to punch him. You son of a bitch, just crazy stuff. I liked this nerdy kid with like big glasses who was just like, yeah, like the teacher was yelling at me for something I didn't do, and I kind of took the blame for these other assholes, so I just like left the room and said like, when you calm down, we could talk about this later. And then the teacher's like, you can't just leave a classroom when your teacher's talking to you like that, you should respect your authority. He's like, why? Why should I? I didn't do anything wrong. He's like, well, you're getting a detention anyway. He's like, I'll do the detention in protest, but I don't believe this is my fault. And if this happens again, I'm going to be very pissed off. Oh, it's like, that energy is just crazy. Like, I connect so much and I just love so much just kids. Like, why do we have these stupid rules? Why do I have to wear a skirt like this? Why am I getting in trouble for other people just because I am an easy target? Just all this random crap that we do. I just respect it so much. I love seeing that because, well, I don't think teenagers like fully know how to like, you know, say these things. They're never like in the right or in the wrong. I just think it's very interesting how they articulate themselves and how you make that feel. It's very fucked up to me to imagine that I am probably now closer to the age of some of like the teachers than I am to like the students. That's going to, you know, just remind me I'm aging. But also, this is kind of personal to me, just in terms of like the era it's from, because 1968 is the year my dad was born, and my grandmother was 17 or 18 when she had him. So she would be somebody this age, pregnant with my father. So I'm just like, that is where, this is the world she would have grown up in. And then the world after that's what my dad would have grown up. And I think that's so interesting. Crazy documentary. you know, it ends with like a message from like a kid that went to the school who's now in the Vietnam War. And he's like, I don't have anything left. If I die there, there's going to be like my insurance, which is $10,000. You can use it like a scholarship to one of your kids. The other part of this is just seeing like parents talking to their kids, but like, what do you want your daughter's future to look like? I love the one dad who's just like, look, I want my daughter to be successful. Like this big burly guy who just like, she's getting good grades. I don't understand why it sounds like she's flunking. She wants to go to school. I'll get her to school. You know, like, I love that. Just varied accents of just like the 60s era, just like in the middle of the country. It's freaking crazy. The daughter's like, I want to be like a, you know, a beauty cosmetician or whatever it's called. You know, a hairdo lady. Cosmetician? Yeah, that'd be right. I know that was something they taught in my high school. I'll be honest with you folks. I was not a good student in high school. I would leave to go play Call of Duty with my friends or just, what's the point? I graduated. And all right, let's end it like this. I graduated high school because I had a teacher who had a film class and I was one of the few people who was attentive in it. And we just talk about film and stuff. And he got me through it. I'm sure he gave me a lot of extra credits that I probably wouldn't have got elsewhere. I was also really good at writing essays about a book. That's the only reason I got out of there unscathed. But it's really hard to fucking fail high school unless you are actively not invested. High school is not that serious. If you are in high school watching this, I'm just going to tell you now, this means nothing. Once you get out, you have your whole life to figure out, and it's always going to be immensely better. The people you meet are going to move on and do other things. The feelings you had then, they're going to change and shift. You're going to develop into an individual. And 56 years ago, they were dealing with the same shit, except they didn't have an iPhone. They were barely learning how to use a typewriter. And every other teacher was like, well, you're a fat, ugly bitch, and you're never going to walk a fashion line. The fucking teacher. Sorry, I just keep remembering stuff that happens in this movie. The teacher who does, like, the fashion show. She's like, kids, come out. You're fat. Don't wear that. You're too fat to wear that. Okay, next one. You're way too fat to wear that. No thanks, no you. And you girls, you don't know how to fucking walk. Let me show you how to walk. I'm going to show you how to walk. I'm a cool, sexy older lady. It's crazy. She wasn't that sexy. The sexiest teacher is the Simon and Garfunkel teacher. She's really cool. Great, Doc. I don't know. I had so much. It was just really interesting watching this. I don't know if I had fun. I was just like, this is crazy to think about. All these people are old now, 56 years ago. That's crazy. But I had fun. And for like the first documentary we're kind of talking about here, it's cool to look back on high school and just see like things are always the same, but the stuff they teach, the way they teach it and how we behave, that's kind of different. It's a social place for kids to learn and do shit. I kind of dig that. I like that. Planet of the Apes. The 2001 version. That's right. We're talking apes today. We have a new movie coming out very soon. And a little behind the scenes, I was planning on doing like what we did for the Cowabunga summer. I'm going to like talk about every single Apes movie. The unfortunate thing was I just got too busy. So I said we'll talk about one of them. I picked this one because I wouldn't have to worry about any other sequels or whatever. Let's just get this one out of the way because it opens up a lot of firsts for this channel. The first time we're talking apes, and the first time we're talking Tim Burton. Two things I have very different opinions on. First off, I love Planet of the Apes. I would argue it is probably my favorite film franchise. It is my favorite franchise that has been consistently operating from the 60s, the 70s, random scattered whatevers here and there, a TV show here and there, books and comics and all that. And then the 2000s and then the modern era stuff and new stuff on the way. I love this world. I love the concepts in this world. And this is the first time we're talking Tim Burton, a director I'm indifferent to. I personally like a lot of his stuff. I personally hate a lot of his stuff. In that way, I kind of respect him. The dude, he makes stuff and that's cool. And there's some things we agree on. Suburbia is weird. Goth girls are awesome. Sometimes we're trapped in our own headspace on what to do with our life. We can agree on all those things and other things we don't agree on. Like what's kind of hot sometimes or like what's going on in certain aspects of our life or our mental state and why we feel trapped in ourselves. But that's okay. I like him. I think he's a weird, goofy guy and I appreciate that in any form of a director. Just a weirdo getting to do whatever he wants. I love that. He remade Planet of the Apes in 2001, before we got the Rise, Dawn, and War. This came out. And it's... Okay. This is not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. If you straight up told me you disliked this film, I would believe you and I would support your decision. However, I personally love this film and think it's insanely good. Okay, insanely good's a stretch. I love almost every aspect of it. I think it's a really interesting, creative piece. And just watching it for this video, watching it to talk about it again, I was left with this feeling that we just don't make things like this anymore. And that really upset me, because there's no way a studio today would give you this big of prosthetics, this big of makeup, this big of sets. Like, I missed the era when we just had huge sets all the time that just looked like this. It's very possible I just miss movies that were filmed on film reel and not these digital stuff. I don't know. It's very strange, but I just love the way this stuff looks. Now, there's certain story beats that are dumb, and certain characters that are dumb, and actors that clearly shouldn't be in here. But hey, that's fine, because the stuff I like overshadows the stuff I dislike. And that is just because this is insane. Like, it's insane to want to redo Planet of the Apes, especially, like, in the 2000s, when we're not really, like, at the era where we could do this stuff yet. It's very, very weird that a studio would want to do this. But whatever, let's get one of the hottest stars of the time period, Mark Wahlberg, to come in here and do this. A guy who clearly wants to be anywhere else. Do you ever just see an actor and you're just like, this looks like somebody who has no time for nerdy shit? Like, he seems like a guy who'd rather be at a baseball game or fixing a truck somewhere or, you know, beating up a minority or something. This seems like a guy who just hates the idea that he has to do a space movie. I've never seen somebody more uncomfortable to be walking around in my life. He seems like he hates every second of this and doesn't want to be here and is just bored out of his mind. And that sucks. Now, in the last one, we had Heston. Heston led, like, the first Planet of the Apes movie. And that's a guy that's all charisma. And everyone else around him is operating on different levels of success. The problem with this movie is that the lead has no interest in this, but every other supporting cast member is delivering some incredible work. Sometimes you just forget who's in this. Like, Chris Christopherson shows up for like 10 minutes, plays an old guy, gets killed. It's crazy. And all of the actors playing the apes. God, you just love seeing actors dedicated to, like, looking like this. We don't do it anymore. We don't have actors who would be like, you want me to sit down for 10 hours to put on big chimp lips? I'll do it. I'm Tim Roth. I'll deliver one of the best performances you've ever seen. I love this movie. I love the performances in this movie. Like, everybody is just, they're going for it. And I appreciate that so much. Everything that Tim Roth does is unbelievable. His movements, his voice, his exaggerated attempts of ego. He is a perfect counterpart to, like, the classic Dr. Zaius villain. Because that's what this is. Like, in the original Planet of the Apes, you have this idea about, like, the subspecies of humans and what is right, what is morally wrong, who is, like, bigger than somebody or worth more than somebody. You mix that in with, like, the ideas of theology and religion and science and how, like, a society maintains itself. And then in the more modern interpretations, you have these ideas of just, like, what does it mean to build a society? What does it mean to find your home, find your family, to be accepted, and, like, the struggles of actually living through war and becoming, like, an older person on the other side of that. When your whole goal is, like, to not be perceived as the Messiah, but suddenly you become the Messiah. And in this one, it's just, what if we got a gun and it really just ruined society? I don't know what this is a reaction to, but it's insane. You know, it's just this insane movie where everybody is screaming all the time. The ADR of the ape sound effects, the Wilhelm scream shows up in this. It's just unreal and insane. And a lot of that is just Tim Roth just screaming about being in charge when his dying father, played by Charlton Heston, is like, society used to be different, boy. Crack this vase and take the gun to remind us of who we were. damn them all to hell. And I'm like, yeah, that's just great. That's just great. And then Paul Giamatti is freaking fantastic as like a slave trader. And you're like, okay, we're going to deal with like ideas of slave trading. Sort of until we don't. It's not really about like society either, which that might be like the main criticism you could take away from this. Planet of the Apes is a genre and a franchise that is about something. It's about like shining a light on how humanity treats itself and the things around us. And this movie slightly broaches that topic, but not at all, actually. Like, the most they do is letting Helena Bonham Carter be like, actually, they're pretty smart. Humans have like capabilities and stuff, and they like made my clothes. And maybe like I do own slaves, but I'm also like a good person, I guess. Let's get it out of the way. This is a very key thing we have to talk about in this movie before we get into the plot. That is Helena Bonham Carter, who plays Ari. I'll say it. Maybe no one else will say it. But this is one thing Tim Burton and I can agree on. That is a damn sexy ape. She's the sexiest character in the movie. And that includes like the weird ape that's like doing like an exotic dance for her like senator husband. Who's like, ooh, 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 ooh. Like, she's gorgeous. I'm sorry. I like Ari. I think she's a good person. And the entire time she is very clearly horny for Mark Wahlberg. She's like, this guy's different. He showed force and he was like capable. And that's very attractive, and they do, like, the iconic kiss, but doesn't feel as good. I don't know. I think she's very attractive and is a very sexy ape. I'm just going to lay it out there. We don't have to talk about it anymore. She's a very sexy ape, and I love her haircut because it's just not kept, and she's got, like, the bohemian thing going on. She's kind of like, oh, and I'm just like, yeah. Yeah, that also just might be how the apes walk, because they don't stand up straight like they do in like the original series. They're just doing like their ape walks. But I guess we could talk about the plot. I could talk about this franchise all day. Let's talk about the plot. Mark Wahlberg works on the Oberon, which is like a big spaceship. And what they do is just like look at stuff. They Star Trek it for a bit. And then they send chimps out to investigate stuff first. They find like a wormhole, storm cluster, whatever. The chimp goes through it first. Pericles goes through it first. Mark Wahlberg wants to go get his chimp. So he goes through it and he winds up on the Planet of the Apes. Now, they don't specify that this is Earth or anything. It almost sounds like it's not because they go through like a wormhole temporal bullshit, but it's probably Earth. Like, it's humans and apes. What else do you want? They have horses and they look normal. It's fine. And in this reality, it's just more like one big ape city in a huge jungle, and the humans are treated as slaves, but they're also like capable of doing other stuff. Like, they can talk. In the original movies, they don't talk, or like the initial movie, they don't talk. But in this one, they all talk. They're all like aware of the class system, but they don't do anything about it. And that feels really like lazy Hollywood, where they can't really like talk about the issue, and they're just more like, well, we just want this to be an action franchise, because that's what Planet of the Apes is famous for, being an action franchise. So Mark Wahlberg defends himself, he gets bought by Helena Bonham Carter, and then just like they escape from their captors and are chased by a general in his army. And that's essentially the plot. They want to get to the spaceship. The spaceship is a ruin that crashed there earlier, and then it just turns into like a big battle at the end. And that is the weakest part. I'm with this movie 100%, 90% until we get to the final battle. And it completely, well, see, I keep trying to like say this is like a bad ending. It is, but I'm not against it. I just think it's bad and completely destroys the narrative. But it's like watching like hundreds of extras in ape suits battle other humans in a desert, and I guess that's cool, and it looks interesting, and I don't hate that. It just goes against the tone that we should be keeping, and maybe that's why Burton's not, like, the right choice to direct this, because he doesn't have, like, a, you know, philosophical thing to ask, and maybe he should. Maybe that'd be better, but I don't hate it. I really don't hate it. I don't know. I don't know if this one. There's so much about it I like. The prosthetics are great. The references are great. Everyone is just acting so hard. The city looks incredible. If it wasn't for Mark Wahlberg and, like, the annoying human characters, we're talking about, like, a really cool thing. Like, all the humans are kind of, like, lame. Kris Kristofferson could have been cool, but we killed him. There's a blonde girl who's jealous that Helena Bonham Carter is like the hornier character. There's a little boy who's just like, I could do it too. And you're like, we don't give a shit what you can do. And they're just all there. They like run through the city. They get into the swamps. They try to find like his ship. It gets crashed. They find it. And then they like run through like a guerrilla soldier encampment to like cross the river because the apes are afraid of water. They manage to do that. They get to the old ruins. They realize that it's the Oberon. They realize that the chips that are from like the Oberon are actually the ones that like started the society. And that's when Pericles returns at the end of the battle to be like, hey, I'm the big chimp now. Yay, everyone's here because of me. I'm their god. I'm like, yeah, you are, man. That's pretty cool. This is one of those movies where the more I talk about it, the more I think about it, it doesn't work. But when I'm sitting there experiencing everything going on the screen, the great prosthetics, the cool camera movements, the cool score from Danny Elfman, it is just so of the time in a thing we don't make anymore, and none of it is not working for me. When I sit back in hindsight and go, yeah, this is a lot. This is kind of stupid. Weird relationship dynamics we're building here. An actor who doesn't want to be a part of this, it starts to fall apart. But Tim Roth, man. Michael Clark Duncan, are you kidding me? The best like side story is the two gorillas. It's Attar, played by Michael Clark Duncan. And it's Krull, who is played by, I can't remember his name. They're like soldiers that work together, but one got ousted because he protested something the general did, and now he works with Ari, and they just have like this conflict of like, you used to be a good soldier, now look at what I'm reduced to, and look what I'm fighting for now. And I'm like, yes, that's awesome. That should be the movie. Don't give me this shit with like the humans. Give me this. That's what the new ones have really figured out. We want to see the apes. We don't care about the people. What have they done for us lately? Nothing. They destroyed our planet. And there's just like a really lazy attempt of Mark Wahlberg trying to explain, humanity destroyed itself. I don't know what to tell you. We're just really bad at doing everything. You know, sometimes you think we're going to be okay, but we destroyed the apes in our zoos, and now we destroyed ourselves. We really don't got anything going on. And you're like, yeah, thanks, Mark. Could have told you that to begin with. But nah, the opening's great. The dinner sequence is fantastic when they're talking about, do humans have a soul? I love the scene where the apes doing like a sex dance and the humans run through. That's really funny. That's going to stay with me forever. It's the only scene I actively think about a lot. And it looks great. I can't deny that. It looks great. As much as like the final battle is stupid where we like use the engines of the Oberon to burn a bunch of chimps. It looks cool except for the terrible fire effects, but that's fine. And the final shot where we see like the Abraham Lincoln statue, but it's General Thade. I can't hate that. I don't think it's smart. I don't think it's like brilliant, but I don't hate it. I know what we're doing. We're trying to rip on the old thing of seeing the Statue of Liberty. It's just not that. Why are they driving like normal cars and stuff? That's also because now they're not like in an ape city. They're just in Washington. So that's weird. And that makes no sense. But you know what? As far as a vibe movie goes, for a movie that's 2 hours, it holds me together for about 90 minutes before completely losing itself to some absurdity. And I guess that's okay. It is a time capsule. I think the eras before and after it are better ape stuff. The original stuff is, it's always going to mean so much to me. And the new stuff is just perfect storytelling. And I cannot wait to see Kingdom. This is just like the weird oddity where it's like, sometimes we just try to reboot stuff and you forget about it, you know? And that's okay. You gotta have a few misses before you get it right, and you might need this failure to truly do the franchise better, like 10 years on. So that's okay. I'm for this movie. I'm pro this movie. More than anything, I want to buy the action figures from this movie. Every day, I go to this antique store nearby, and they have a bunch of just like old figures for sale. The Paul Giamatti orangutan is there, and I'm just like, do I have an excuse to buy this? Maybe now's the excuse. And they also have like the what's his name? I don't even remember his name. Taylor? No, Taylor's the other guy. Oh, the Mark Wahlberg character. They have him there too. Is it John? Jonathan something? Whatever. It's a weird movie that's just okay, but I like it a lot because it's just like the weird psychotic sex trip of like an apes franchise. And that's what I like. you know, I want to see my apes be fucked up sometimes, and that's cool. Ari is attractive. I'm sorry. I'm not going to say she's not. Like, everything she's doing, it's working for me, okay? And I know it works for Tim Burton because he's like, she's hot. I got to put her in my movies. I can't disagree with Tim on that one. This movie's crazy. This movie is crazy and doesn't fully work, but it's interesting. Maybe don't watch it, or you know what? Do. Watch it. I don't care. There's better ape stuff, but this one is its own timepiece, and that's kind of cool enough to talk about it. Plan 9 from Outer Space. That's right, folks. This film that we are talking about right now marks the 100th film we have covered in Movie Tales. It is not the 100th episode. That's going to be its own thing I do a bigger movie for. But I figured for the 100th film, which is a celebration, and if you want to see all the films I covered, there's a list on Letterboxd. If you want to see like a particular movie or see if I covered a movie or not, you can check it there. But for the 100th movie, I was like, let's do something that matters to film. Something that we could talk about that's kind of important. So it's Plan 9 from Outer Space. You know, something that has been hailed numerous times over as the worst film ever made. That's what we do here. I like talking about old sci-fi, so Plan 9 fits into that category. And it's a bad movie, so I figured, yeah, I guess we could talk about it. Now, I have always been somebody who's very culturally aware of Plan 9 from Outer Space. It's always been a movie I was aware of. As a young movie guy, I knew this one existed. I own a poster for it. Don't know why. I bought it a long time ago, and I own it. It's up in my bedroom, along with a poster for Creature from the Black Lagoon and a Casablanca poster. And I knew it from Seinfeld. That's where I probably first heard about it. I just knew it from, you know, Ed Wood. I watched Ed Wood a lot. It's one of my more favorite Tim Burton movies. So I figured, yeah, let's go back to this one. Well, I haven't gone to in a long time, just because I've seen it, I was aware of it, I never felt the urge to have it as a deeper part of my life. I still don't. There is a reason this is considered a bad movie, because it's a bad movie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I was really hoping to come into this one with a fresh set of eyes and be like, this is fun, you know? But it's not really. It's really boring, and it's kind of a terrible script. If you could say there's a script, it's essentially just Ed Wood getting people to say things for a thing he wants to do. It's bad. But if you are a fan of film history, I guess watch it. I mean, there should be something there to learn, but at the same time, there isn't. Now, I'll commend it. It's a movie that got made, and there's actors in it. And some of them are good. Some of them aren't. Some of them are just people. But it's a movie that got made, and you have to respect that. You know, I don't have a movie made, so I can't be too mad about this movie for existing. I never made a movie, so it's got one up on me. You know, Edwards, you got one up on me, man. You're beating me already. But it's a mess. It's terrible editing, terrible sound mix. Even for the time, I don't think it's perfect. It has some bad audio. It has some bad dialogue. It's got bad effects, if you can call them that. It's a mess. But there is something interesting about the mess that makes you go, okay, I guess I see where you want to go here, if you could say there was a plan for this at all. There isn't really one. The idea of this movie, and I don't know how deep into the plot we're going to go on Plan 9 from Outer Space. Nobody cares. The basic plot is a couple of spaceships in the form of a flying saucer, clearly held on strings, show up to Earth. On them is a guy named Eros. He works for the Excellency, like some guy who's dressed up like he's a medieval knight. And he's like, we're on a mission to this planet to stop you from doing stupid shit. That's the point. And to do that, they have to use Plan 9. Now, Plan 9 would be resurrecting the recently dead, not just the dead, the recently dead, like died in the past couple of days. So that happens to three people. It happens to an old lady. It happens to an old man. Well, I don't think they say old lady, but that's the wife of the old man. but she's younger than him, so good for that old man, I guess. And then the Inspector Clay, who's like a big guy, it's Tor Johnson. He's huge. He's a big guy for the 50s. Big boy. Arguably the three biggest names. Vampira, which we'll talk about in a minute here. Bela Lugosi, who is in the movie. Bela Lugosi is in the movie for two scenes that they filmed before he died, but he died before filming finished, so every other time we need to use that old man character, it's somebody hiding their face like they're Dracula. Which is weird, because the scenes of Bela Lugosi, he's not looking like Dracula, but when we have to hide that it is not Bela Lugosi, we make the character Dracula adjacent. Very strange and stupid, and I don't know why we're doing that. And then Tor Johnson, what if a big bald guy was like a zombie? That's it. That's that. Doesn't really affect what's actually going on because Eros has his own plan. And I guess it's just like to scare the people. But we just see like the reaction from a lot of people in the world, if you could call it the world. It's just more like California to what happened when they saw the flying saucer. A pilot saw it and he goes to complain to his wife about it because the military stopped him from talking about it. And then him and his wife see it again. There's a lieutenant who's like working a case and he like fires guns at it, but it doesn't do anything to stop the, saucer. So he has to team up with this guy and like some other police officers and stuff to like do something about it. That's the basic plot of this 78 minute movie is they're flying saucers. We know there's people inside them who turn you into zombies. It's their plan 9. And now Earth is trying to stop that. And it's a mess. I have nothing to say on, like, the acting. There are some good acting choices, like Tor Johnson's a big guy, looks like a zombie. He's pretty cool. All of the other men who are of like, medium size with medium haircuts, you could intersperse them, and I couldn't even tell you one characteristic about any of them, except that they're reading bad dialogue. There is one chief inspector, or, like, some lieutenant or whoever, who, like, keeps aiming a gun at his head, and that is because the actor wanted to see if, you know, Edward Wood would figure out that he's doing that, and he never did. So there you go. That happened too. The sets are bad, but that's just because we had no budget. And then for some reason, Vampira's in here, and she plays a dead woman who never talks. And look, I am a fan of Vampira. That is something that is exactly up my alley. For those of you who don't know, one of my favorite people to ever live is Cassandra Peterson, and I love her persona, Elvira. And Elvira, if you haven't read her Yours Cruelly book, was originally going to be like the son of Vampiro. That's how like one of the original conceits started for the Elvira character, was she was auditioning to be like the daughter of Vampira. And Vampira saw this girl was like, the direction we want is not what you are exuding. So they made Elvira different. I love that. I love that type of character. It's really fun. I just wish she had more to do than just, like, be around and go, like, But she doesn't, so who cares? There's nothing to this movie, really. And it's pretty much 60 minutes of men looking at poorly rendered flying saucers and complaining in stupid dialogue. And then another, like, 7 minutes of Eros talking to the Excellency and just people like, look at these primitive idiots. They're so stupid. So the reason that they're here, Eros and his people are here, is they want to stop the Earthlings from doing something stupid. Because humans are so stupid, if they figured out the next form of bomb, they'd kill everyone in the galaxy. These people that came to Earth from outer space, they figure out how to harness the power of solarnamite, or whatever. Look, there's a really cool explanation in the movie. Perhaps the only good thing to come out of this movie is this explanation where it's like Earth learned how to make a gun. All right, Earth learned how to make a gun. Then you made a grenade. And then you made a big bomb. And then you made a bigger bomb. And then you learned to harness the atom and made an atom bomb. And then you learned to harness hydrogen and made a hydrogen bomb. Well, we figured eventually at some point in the history of Earth, probably in your future, you're going to learn to harness solar energy, the light of the sun, and turn that into a bomb and destroy the entire galaxy. Because you're stupid enough to do that, you fucking idiots. You're going to kill us all, you fucking losers. We hate you. We're going to stop you from doing that by bringing your dead back to life and scaring you. And then the three men who are up on board Eros' ship, Lieutenant, the pilot, and some other guy I can't remember who has a mustache, they're like, "You're what? What are you talking about?" And then he's like, "You stupid, stupid humans with your stupid minds. You're all stupid and stupid." And then they just kind of like fight them and like kick. They like pants Eros, kick him in the nuts, and like blow up his shit and send him back into space. Just like, "Well, we solved that problem. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens." You're like, "What?" It's ridiculous. This movie is insanity because it's dumb. Nothing makes sense. The script is bad. Every single character says the name of the person they're talking to. There are random scenes put in where it's like a police officer just saying something for no reason so we can have extra minutes to fill out a sequence before we do the next thing. I'm fine with cheap-looking science fiction. This channel and this series of videos is dedicated to cheap science fiction. So I am not mad at this movie for having terrible flying saucers or really cheap sets or dumb costumes. That's not the problem with this movie. The problem with this movie lies in the fact that I'm not having fun watching a single shred of this. And I should be. This should be something I'm very excited by. Something I want to be watching over and over again. Something I want to throw on to show people or just having like a get-together or something. And that's not it. This is just something that exists. And it's not even that interesting or compelling. And nothing looks that good. There is one sequence where Tor Johnson's crawling out of a grave that I thought looked really cool. And other than that, I mean, it's just like a flashlight barely working and, you know, just kind of just simplistic camera movements. And it's bookended and it opens with like a guy talking like, "What you're about to see is the future that's going to destroy us all. And perhaps we should prepare for it." Ho ho ho, who's to say? Bela Lugosi might have saved this if he had lived, but he didn't. He wouldn't have saved it anyways. The guy looks like he's 50 years younger than Bela Lugosi. Very weird that we couldn't get a different older gentleman. We couldn't have just written off the character and tried something new. I know Ed was friends with Bella, it's whatever. I don't know. Was this anything? Did anybody have fun watching this episode or listening to it? There's nothing to this movie. It's nothing. Is it the worst movie we've covered in our 100 films? I still think the worst film we covered is Halloween Resurrection. But this is a close second, and it's the least fun I had watching one of these films in a long time. So that sucks. But hey, we made it to 100 films. I made a fun video montage if you want to check that out instead. Until then, I'll see you next week with a new episode. Thank you all for watching this video on Galactic Tales and Plan 9 from Outer Space. Be sure to like and subscribe to the channel. As always, you can check me out on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And of course, I will catch you in the next one. Have fun. Stay safe. You stupid, stupid humans with your stupid minds. You're all idiots. Good luck.